Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going. Whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby, Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit amazon.com/prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. amazon.com/prime.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the amazing Rico Bronya podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Oh boy. Oh boy. Welcome to episode number 484. Of Rico Bronya, as the New York Mets officially lose the Subway Series at Yankee Stadium 2 out of 3 in a game that was a heartbreaker, even if the final score says 8-2, 2-2 game, bottom of the 8th inning, disaster strikes. Before we get into this game, before we recap the series, before we look ahead to Boston, before we complain wildly about the state of this Met team, let me complain wildly about the freaking parking lot at Yankee Stadium. I went to this Sunday night game, and instead of doing a drive home Rico, I figured, nah, it's a series ending Rico. Let me wait till I get home to the Rico Bronya studio, and we can politely talk about this series ending. I was in the Jacob Rupert parking lot, and I'm not a big parking lot guy. When I go to Yankee Stadium, I usually try to find a spot on the street, sometimes legal, sometimes illegal, and I take my chances. And the reason I do that is because getting out of Yankee Stadium when you're parked on the street is not that difficult. But when you're going through a lot, it's usually a wait. You know, usually you got to wait. You know, cars are moving, cars are here. And then you get out of the lot, and then there's traffic. But I took Jed, I took my oldest son. So I didn't want to deal with the street parking, didn't want to deal with him walking up that giant hill on Woody Crest. So I said, you know what? I'm going to be a responsible father, and I'm going to go into the parking lot. What a freaking nightmare. I timed it. From the moment we got into our car, and yes, we stayed to the bitter end, and that was part of the problem because a lot of people left early. You know, once Cody Bellinger hits the Grand Slam, the place empties out. So everyone's in their car. They're preparing to leave. From the moment we got in the car to exit of the Rupert took 49 minutes, and most of it didn't involve any moving. And to make it worse, there was no cell reception. So I wanted to text my wife, as most of us may do. Hey, hun will be home in an hour. Couldn't even text her. Couldn't even text Pete, the Hoffermater, saying, hey, Hoff, I may have to push back to Rico. Couldn't contact the outside world. And I tell my son, I said, Jet, I know this is not appealing. Close your freaking eyes. Try to go to sleep. You got school the next day. Meanwhile, as we were leaving the ballpark, Tommy Lugauer, the fine executive producer of Evan and Tiki, decides to tell Jet, hey, when you go to school tomorrow, just tell Yankee fans they won their World Series. And I'm like, Jet, if you do that, I mean, you can, but don't play that game. And that's where we'll start. Let's not play that game. I have done the Rico now for 3 years, parts of 3 years, parts of 4 years, I guess. I've been on WFAN full time since 07, at all since 04. And I am not going to play the game of, hey, it's your World Series. I'm not going to minimize us losing 2 out of 3. They won the series. Now, what does that mean at the end of the day? Probably not that much. Much like us sweeping them a year ago, it was nice in the moment. It's nice little fodder. But at the end of the day, it's a series. It's not the end of the world. It's not also the entire world, much like last year. So for those Yankee fans voyeuristically listening or watching the Rico Bronya, looking for pain by the fact that we lost to the New York Yankees, you're not going to get it. Here's what you're going to get. I'll give you a little preview. You're going to get us talking about the problems this team has. You're going to get us talking about what happened in the finale of this series and any concerns we have moving forward. Like, for example, this offense continues to be a problem. Do I tip my hat partially to Max Fried, who's had a fine season? Yeah, to a degree. I mean, Max Fried's been great all year. And the Mets got two runs against him, so I guess that's a party. One of it was a break because Fried threw that wild pitch before he struck out Juan Soto. But this offense has been inconsistent all year. This offense, really going back to the finale against Pittsburgh, and if you want to even go before that, has done next to nothing. So when you highlight, hey, what happened in this three-game series, or specifically, what happened on Sunday night, it's kind of the same story all year long whenever this team loses a game. They don't hit, and they don't take advantage of opportunities. In this game, in the second inning, they had two on and nobody out. And thank God for Jeff McNeil, because remember, Marte struck out, Alvarez struck out, and it looked like they were going to take a scoring opportunity and throw it away. They get the two-out hit from Jeff McNeil. Unfortunately, Luis Angel Acuna can't build off of that. They get a double from Starling Marte with two outs in the fourth inning. They can't take advantage of it. Even in the fifth inning where they did tie the game, they did it on a wild pitch. Acuna laid down the bunt, which I got to be honest, I didn't have a problem with, because I looked at it this way. Runner on first, nobody out, fifth inning, down by a run. Acuna has not exactly been sparking it lately anyway. Let me give my best hitters an opportunity with runners in scoring position. Let me just give it to them. If I'm going to win this game, I'm going to need a big hit from my big guys. So I didn't have a problem with it. I thought Acuna was really bunting for a hit anyway to try to set up 2-1 and nobody out for Lindor and Soto. Problem is Lindor grounds out. Now, they take advantage of the Max Fried wild pitch, really aggressive base running by Jeff McNeil, who in a lot of ways was the best player on the field for the Mets tonight or last night, depending on when you're consuming the Rico. Had the RBI hit in the second inning with two outs, drew the leadoff walk in the fifth inning, scored on the wild pitch, even walked in the seventh inning. And that was another golden opportunity the Mets couldn't take advantage of. Jonathan Loaisiga comes in. It looks like he's going to put together an immaculate inning, and McNeil draws a walk. And then Acuna hits that ground ball to third that Peraza just can't make a play on, turns into an error, and you're set up with Lindor, two on, two out, and it's bad luck. See, this is the thing. When I asked Mendy the other day about their struggles with runners in scoring position, one of the things he said was, well, sometimes we hit in a bad luck. And he's not wrong. Like, that Lindor one was a line drive. It was right out Juan Soto. It was bad luck. Much like DJ LeMay, who had bad luck a day earlier when he came up with guys on base and lined one right at Juan Soto. The problem with the bad luck discussion is it adds up. It adds up because they're not hitting consistently with runners in scoring position. And certainly you can circle a few of those bad luck scenarios. But there's plenty of others, like Francisco Alvarez in the fourth inning, who just struck out with a runner on second and two outs. But I start with the offense. I'll get to the defense in a second, don't worry, because that's been kind of the overreaching issue or overarching issue whenever they lose games. The Mets are right now 29-18, which is pretty good. But when they lose games, it's usually for this reason. Now let's get to the crap defense. I made a suggestion on the Rico that we did after game two of this series. And that was simply, hey, Brett Beatty is earning it. And he's earning an opportunity to start against the lefty, even a tough one like Max Fried, because of his defense. And it didn't hurt that he had career numbers against Fried that were at least respectable. Small sample size, 2-for-6. But Brett Beatty deserved to start this game, the finale of the Subway Series, not because I thought he was getting three hits against Max Fried, but because his defense is that much better than Vientos's. And I don't know what happened to Mark Vientos defensively, because I could understand offensively why he's had a kind of a step back year. And there's still plenty of time for Vientos to turn it around. He's got the average up to 240. Not great, but certainly a lot better than where it was a couple of weeks ago. And I have faith that this season could start to still turn into a, you know, maybe not the matching of last year, but a solid offensive year. And he's shown progress in that regard. But how do you explain the defense going backwards? I'm not trying to tell you he was every Brooks Robinson last year, but he was better than this. And in the first inning of this game, the first batter of this game, Mark Vientos can't make a routine play on a Paul Goldschmidt ground ball to third base. And what makes that frustrating is that it has all been opened up now for Mendy, at least for now, to say, you're the DH. There is no DH on this team. Starling Marte starts against lefties, and he did have a double in this game. So, all right, you know, I didn't want to play him. I wanted to DH Vientos and play Beatty at third base. And even though I'm not sure if Beatty would have gone 1-for-2 with a double in his two at-bats against Max Fried, I know he wasn't going to butcher the Paul Goldschmidt ground ball to third base, which set up that entire first inning. The Yankees end up getting two runs because of the Cody Bellinger double. And obviously, you can't assume everything falls the same if the play is made on Goldschmidt, but that's an unearned run. And that's a run that was handed to the Yankees because of the bad defense by Mark Vientos. And I think that this game, this finale against the Yankees, really shed a light on something that we've talked about, but maybe haven't talked enough about. And that's the fact that the defense hasn't been good enough. And that gets exposed when you're not hitting. When you are relying on winning low-scoring, close games, which the Mets have had to do a lot this season, you look at these 29 wins, how many of them have been 3-2 games, low-scoring games? When you rely on that, your defense needs to be better than this garbage. So I start with Mark Vientos because that's the tone setter of the game. Coldy hits a ground ball to third base, and we were just coming off a game in which Brett Beatty made every play imaginable, and here's Vientos booting an easy one. Now let's jump ahead. Let's jump ahead to the Pete Alonso play in the eighth inning, because the Mets are kind of flirting with trouble all night long. David Peterson was able to make the big pitch quite often. Even in that first inning after he gave up that double to Cody Bellinger, that could have turned into an even more crooked first inning or a crooked number. And he got Volpe out, and he got Dominguez out. He put the leadoff man on in the second. He got out of it. He gets into trouble in the fifth inning, really the walk to Paul Goldschmidt ahead of Grisham, and then walking Aaron Judge intentionally, and then walking Cody Bellinger on four pitches, and he gets Volpe to ground out. And then you jump ahead to the seventh, where Waskar Brazoban had his issues throwing strikes, specifically walking Grisham ahead of Judge with two outs and nobody on, which cannot happen, and he makes the huge pitch against Volpe. So they were dancing with trouble all night long. And then you go to that eighth inning with Ryan Stanek on the mound. And after he issues a leadoff walk to Dominguez, same problem, that cannot happen. And he gets a big strikeout against LeMahieu. He hangs a splitter on 1-2 to Austin Wells on the pitch after Mendy and the trainer came out to check on Stanek because I guess something was going on with his leg. Mendy says after the game had nothing to do with him hanging a sinker to Austin Wells. And then you get to the Yorbat Vivas at-bat with second and third one out. What a great, first of all, let me give credit to an opponent. Sometimes we're allowed to do that. A great at-bat by Vivas. Kept fouling ball after ball after ball off against Stanek, who's pumping it in at 99 and 100. And I'm sitting in the, I was sitting in a luxury suite, so I was bougie tonight, I admit. But I'm in the right field corner. So I see Vivas hit that ball right at Pete Alonso. And like it was a slow motion horror movie. Because there are certain things as a Met fan you'll never get over. There are certain things you will never forget. Certain things that still haunt you throughout your life. Kenny Rogers walking Andrew Jones is certainly one of them. Lucas Duda, you knew I was going there. I think we were all going there. Lucas Duda's throw in the 2015 World Series is still a haunter. And as Pete makes that play, which like I feel like I'm on top of because we're upstairs, we're above the right field corner, so we're looking down on him. as Pete winds up to make that throw, and I see the ball sailing to the point where Alvarez is not even making an attempt for it because it was such a wild throw, I had a sickening callback feeling to the Lucas Duda throw. And look, does he get Dominguez at the plate? I have no idea. We saw Alonso make the exact same play one day earlier where he made a perfect throw. So we know he's capable of it. And Pete took full responsibility after the game. Thank you, Pete. But that was an absolute nightmare sequence. With that said, and Pete's got to be better, and we all know it, you don't have to give up an RBI single to Paul Goldschmidt. That doesn't have to happen. And then when Hennessy's Cabrera comes in, he doesn't have to give up a grand slam to Cody Bellinger right after he struck out Aaron Judge to give us a little bit of a tease. All that doesn't have to happen. But clearly that throw, that miscue by Pete Alonso opened up the floodgates. And give Pete some credit because after the game, he said that was the momentum changer. Basically, that play led to everything else. And it did. And Pete's got to be better. He can't make a garbage throw like that. Because I don't know how much stuff affects guys mentally, but if Pete makes a perfect throw and Dominguez beats it, it sucks. But maybe he's right. Maybe it doesn't lead to a Goldschmidt RBI single, a walk to Grisham, and then a grand slam two batters later to Cody Bellinger. So this defense needs to get better, and it's been almost everybody. You know, Lindor didn't make any miscues today, but we all know his defense hasn't been good enough. Honestly, the guy who played great defense this weekend was Juan Soto. I mean, he plays a ball perfectly off the wall in game two, holding a runner from third. He made a great running catch that I did not see in this game because that was the baño portion of the game, the bathroom part of the game. It happens. I mean, I did kind of see it because I put it on my phone as I was waiting, but I didn't see it live, put it that way. So Juan Soto, and we'll get to him. Juan Soto has a huge base running play that leads directly to a run, helps the Mets win a game. He makes some really good defensive plays, including that, you know, running catch in game three, playing it well off the wall in game two, but he hits and does nothing offensively. So it was everything the opposite of the critiques and the compliments of Juan Soto. He gives you nothing offensively, including just an absolute dud here in the finale of this series, going 0-for-4 with two strikeouts and then barely runs a ball out when DJ LeMahieu robs him of a base hit to start the eighth inning. But his base running was good, and he played some really good defense. Yippity-doo-dah. And I'll make you a prediction. I've already made this prediction leading into the series, but I'll say it now here on the Rico Bronya. The honeymoon is over. Because a lot of Met fans expected this weekend to be the breakout. That for all of his struggles, and I get it, because we've talked about it here, it's not as if he's been abysmal. We know his OPS is good. We know he draws a lot of walks. We know he impacts guys around him. No one's denying that. No one's saying this is an all-time awful season. But what we are saying is he hasn't been impactful enough. And the view was, this is the weekend where he becomes impactful. This is the weekend against his former team with all the boos, with all the talk, with all the expletive chants. Juan Soto is going to stick it to him. And he didn't. And quite frankly, as I sit here right now, before we get into the Rico, I'm the man now star of the series and the net negative, despite the good base running and despite the good defense, I almost think because of this belief that this was going to be the weekend he breaks out, he is the net negative. Because I think when you look at this weekend, you have a lot of options to point at one person. You could go to Tylor Megill, who crapped the bed in the opener. He's probably the favorite to be the net negative of this series. But the truth is, they didn't score any runs. They scored two runs in the finale. They scored three runs in game two. They scored two runs on Friday. You score seven runs in a three-game series, you're lucky you won a game. So it should be someone concerning the offense. Look, Francisco Lindor didn't do much in this series. You could certainly pick him. Francisco Alvarez, when he played, didn't do anything in this series. You can pick him. Mark Vientos combined the defense and the fact he didn't do much in this series, you could pick him. But the thing about Vientos and Lindor is they each drove in a run. And remember,
you just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Nerds. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going, whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's only at 7 of them. So I think when you combine the belief that he was going to stick it to his former team, and stick it to all those fans that booed him and chanted F words at him and turned their back on him, good job, Tiki. I'll tell you right now, and maybe it's emotional because I just sat in an hour and a half of traffic getting the hell out of Yankee Stadium, but the expectation we all had, right or wrong, probably wrong, was that this was his breakout, this was his Met moment. To me, makes him the net negative. It's either him or Tyler McGill. So I'll give it to Juan Soto. Do you agree with that, Hoff? Is that a reasonable rip that we all figured against his former team he'd break out? And he did nothing. Let's go through it. He went 0-for-4. He went 1-for-4, and he went 0-for-2. And great, he drew a bunch of walks. He drew 4 walks. I don't know if that's enough.
No, I mean, listen, he was awful. At least, again, offensively awful. And yeah. I thought that there was going to be one game. It was one game that he was going to just completely take over. And we've seen it before. He's had two games already where he's had multiple home runs in a game. And I'm like, all right, that's going to happen. That's going to happen at least once. And if that's all we get, at least he steps up. And we got none of it. There was nothing. There was that weak, like you said, there was a weak ground ball to second base that LeMahieu made. And he barely ran to first base. It just was very disappointing. So, yeah, I won't deny it. He's the biggest flop of the series for sure.
Yeah, and look, there's a lot of candidates for the net negative. I mean, even Pete Alonso, you know, outside of the two hits he had in game two of this series, and they were big, like the RBI single in the fourth. He had a double in the eighth inning that didn't lead to anything. That saves him, because if he doesn't have that, he's clearly the net negative based on the defensive miscue that essentially cost them the finale of this series. And he also took an 0-for-4 with multiple strikeouts in the finale of this series. This was one of those weekends. And it kind of is amazing as you talk about it that they won a game. Like, everything you think about from this series, especially offensively, should have led to them being swept. And quite frankly, they were lucky they won the Saturday game. Luckily, Francisco Lindor's medium depth fly ball to center field was enough to score Acuna from third base. But even when they scored runs over the weekend, again, only seven of them, think about the runs that they scored. I mean, it wasn't a lot. Brandon Nimmo had an RBI single in the fourth inning of game one. Lindor had what felt like a meaningless RBI double in the ninth inning of the first game. Let's see. Then you had Alonso's RBI single, a sac fly by Vientos, a sac fly by Francisco Lindor. In this game, they had an RBI single by McNeil and a wild pitch. A run score got a wild pitch. It was not a lot. They also didn't hit a home run in their series. And we joke about Yankee Stadium. They couldn't take advantage of it. So this is one of those take your picks for the net negative, but I'll make it official. To me, it's Juan Soto. In terms of the I'm the man now, Rico star of the series, this is probably the easiest one we've ever handed out. The easiest. It's like, I want to name one person. I mean, look, I don't want to say I want to name one person because I do want to give Griffin Canning credit for pitching into the sixth inning and allowing two runs. And as I mentioned on episode 483, I would have taken him out earlier. So honorable mention, Griffin Canning. Honorable mention, Edwin Diaz. Honorable mention, even Jeff McNeil, who showed you a little bit. Honorable mention, all those guys. But in the biggest blowout maybe we've ever had, the Rico I'm the man now star of the series is Waskar Brazoban. Waskar Brazoban, you think about what he did in game two, cleaning up the mess set up by Mendoza / Canning with two on and one out, and he very calmly gets two ground balls to get through that inning, and then a 1-2-3 seventh inning, including striking out Aaron Judge, should have gotten the win, but we have antiquated rules in terms of wins. So he is your clear star of the game from Saturday. Remember, the origin of the Rico Bronya, I'm the man now star of the series, is that in my scorebook that I've been using for many, many years, I always pick a star of the game. And it's not a Met player. It's whoever I think was the star of the game. And I write it down in my little box and I move on. So, for example, in this game, the finale of this series, to me, the star is Cody Bellinger. It's kind of easy. He drove in six runs. I mean, it is the biggest no-brainer when it comes to star of a game. So we took that and said we should do that for every series. And Waskar Brazoban gets five outs, is the star of the Saturday game. And in this finale, even though he didn't make it easy, how about the balls that this guy showed? Now, let me rip him slightly, because he comes into a tie game in the seventh inning, gets the first two guys out, and now he's facing Trent Grisham. Trent Grisham could hit a home run. He's hit 12 of them. He's had a wonderful season. But the one thing you cannot do, if you're Brazoban or anybody else, is walk him ahead of Aaron Judge. That cannot happen. And he does on five pitches. At that point, luckily, Mendy is clearly thinking about me and what I said to him on Friday, because Brazoban did not come anywhere close to Judge in the at-bat, puts him on base. And so now you're set up with two on and two out for a red-hot Cody Bellinger. Cody Bellinger, who was doing nothing for a while, has complicated the pitch-around Judge idea because he's red-hot. He is the star of the weekend. Like, if they were doing the Hensley Mullins and they were picking the I'm the man now star of the series, it'd be Cody Bellinger. It wouldn't even be close. He was clearly very impactful all weekend long. So it makes things tricky when you pitch around Judge. I'd still do it. I still agreed with it. But obviously, it's trickier with the way Cody's hitting. And Bellinger, it's that comeback or off Brazoban in which Waskar probably should have tried to flip it to Pete Alonso instead of trying to run at the first base. But instead, he runs at the first base, collides with Alonso, and now we're set up with bases loaded for Anthony Volpe. And speaking of the Hensley Mullins, the Make Believe Yankee podcast, the guy you'd be crushing if you're a Yankee fan right now is Anthony Volpe, who left a country on base. Let me add it up. He left a runner on second in the first, left a runner on first in the third, left the bases loaded in the fifth, and the bases loaded in the seventh. So I got eight base runners, and I got five of the eight being in scoring position. That's a rough one for Volpe. I mean, who's kidding who? But Brazoban falls behind them 3-0 and somehow fights back and strikes him out. So it was not easy, but Waskar Brazoban pitches in two of these games. He goes 2 2/3 innings, doesn't allow a run, and gave this offense a chance. Because when Brazoban strikes out Volpe to end the seventh inning, it's a tie game in the eighth with Soto, Alonso, and Vientos coming up. Score a freaking run. Do something. Devin Williams has, I guess, figured things out. There were a couple of hard hit balls against him. The Soto ball where DJ made the nice play and Soto barely ran. Alonso hit a screaming line drive right at Bellinger. And then Vientos struck out. So they did make some decent contact against Devin Williams. But the heart of the order does nothing after that escape job by Waskar Brazoban. And that was the moment in the top of the eighth inning when Vientos struck out. That was the moment where you knew they lost. You know, we always have these moments where, hey, I feel good, or I feel bad. That's the moment you knew they lost this game. But credit to Waskar Brazoban. He is... honestly, he's the last man standing in terms of reliability in the Met bullpen, not named Edwin Diaz. If Edwin Diaz has a permanent space in the circle of trust, just because they need him, he's the closer. And even if he's struggling, he's in the circle of trust because you got no other choice. You look at the Met bullpen right now. Hennessy's Cabrera, no. We'll find out about Jose Castillo, who was just added to the roster after they acquired him from Arizona. But right now, and Dednell Nunez back in the minor leagues, which makes sense. He did not look sharp since coming up here. So those two guys, no circle of trust. Ryan Stanek got thrown out of the circle of trust about a month ago, even though he is a big candidate to come in and out and in and out. Like, that's what Stanek will be. He'll be all over the place, assuming he doesn't end up on the IL with this knee issue. Jose Buteau, no. Max Kranich booted out of the circle of trust. Reed Garrett, I mean, if he's still in it, he's hanging on by a thread, and then you got Brazoban, who unfortunately can't pitch every day. There was a part of me even surprised Mendy went to him on Sunday after he came out and got five outs on Saturday. So this Met bullpen is now featuring one guy in the circle of trust and Edwin Diaz. That's where they're at. But Waskar Brazoban, let's just make it official. Because there is no, there's no pushback on this. This is the easiest Rico, I'm the man now, star of the series that you'll ever have. Waskar Brazoban, congratulations to you. And right now, I mean, he's got his ERA basically under one. It's truly incredible. Now, while this was not a weekend to celebrate, you can celebrate your highlights with Mio Sparkling Sake, a true crowd pleaser. Light, bubbly, and easy to enjoy. Whether you're at Citi Field or your favorite spot, ask for Mio Sparkling Sake by name. A new tradition served chilled, imported from Japan. It's the official sake of Rico Bronya. Enjoy responsibly.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Nerds! Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great, but it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going, whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rico Bronya email exploded based on this finale against the New York Yankees. So you want me to read a couple of these emails, get the feel from the Met fans before we head out to Boston to open up a three-game series against the Red Sox?
I have this feeling that there's going to be a lot of positive emails in this one. Like, there's positive Tommy's going to be all up in this.
Well, positive Tommy putting the seed into Jet's head of tell your friends at school, congrats on your World Series. I told him, I said, you can do it. It's just I'm never going to do it. Like, no. I want my children to think for themselves, even if I guide them towards the fanhood of certain teams. So if that's how you want to approach the first Subway Series, if that's the approach you want to take, okay. But I explained it to him as we were leaving the stadium. I said, look, here's the deal. This is what people used to say to me whenever the Mets would win a Subway Series game, and it would annoy me. Look, the one thing I will say just about this whole it's your World Series thing, which is obviously stupid. We all know that. There is definitely a shift in the view of the Subway Series because of Soto leaving. Like, Yankee fans had a look in their eye that they didn't normally have for Mets Yankees. They always wanted to win it. You don't want to have to hear your friends or your brothers or sisters bothering you by the Mets beating you. But there was a different feel, like there was more energy from the Yankee fan for this Subway Series than there has been in the past. And it's obvious why. I mean, Soto left. They're chanting F. Juan Soto. They're chanting, we love Grisham. They're turning their back. Like, there's clearly a thing there. I wouldn't say it's their World Series, but there was certainly more aggression in this Subway Series.
By the way, did you notice that they were supposed to, on ESPN, talk to Juan Soto mid-game, but they changed it to Brandon Nimmo, and I'm assuming it's because of the constant FU Sotos. They probably didn't want to bleep it out the whole thing. They didn't want anything to leak, so that I'm assuming that's why they made the change.
I thought Soto didn't want to do it. Was it ESPN backing out of it or Soto backing out of it?
Well, whomever it was, I don't know. I mean, they said the way, however I heard it was, or whatever I read was that Soto wasn't going to do it. It's going to be Nimmo. So I didn't really dig too much deep into it. But I mean, again, the whole thing is that you're right. Yankee fans, and it's not, I'm not trying to put a, you know, cold water on anything here. The reality that the Yankee fans said that this wasn't going to be a big deal, but yet this was a huge moment for all Yankee fans to go out there and piss all over Juan Soto. I mean, it was huge. It was a big deal.
And I get it. And I totally get it. Like, I did some research and I tweeted this out on Friday about the Mike Hampton reunion, because Mike Hampton and his situation with the Mets is probably the most similar thing we've ever had to Juan Soto. Obviously, they're, you know, Juan Soto is going to probably end up in the Hall of Fame. Mike Hampton is Mike Hampton. We understand the difference in terms of the player, but the comparison is that the Mets traded for a player in the final year of their contract in Mike Hampton, and he was a main cog for them going to a World Series. I mean, Mike Hampton was the NLCS MVP. We cannot ignore that. He didn't pitch well in the World Series, but nevertheless, he was one of the two aces that the Mets had that helped them win the pennant in 2000. He then leaves as a free agent, goes to the Rockies. Yes, he cited the school system, but we all know he left for the money, which is totally fine. That's the same as what happened here. The Yankees traded for a player. That player was very instrumental in them going to the World Series, and then he left. Whether it was for the money or it was because he thinks the Mets have a better future, it doesn't matter. He left. just like Mike Hampton left. So I went back into the archives because I honestly don't remember Mike Hampton's return. I got to be honest with you. And I think the reason I don't remember it is because I left where I was living in 2000. I graduated high school. I moved down to Washington, D.C., and my days of going to every Met game with my dad were just gone. I was living in Washington, D.C. So when Mike came back in August of 01, I wasn't living there. I probably watched the game on the MLB package or whatever the hell I did. You know, I don't remember it. He faced huge vitriol. Like, I mean, Met fans want it. The article I read said bloodthirsty Met fans. That's how we were described. So I get it. We all should get it. Why were we bloodthirsty at Mike Hampton? We were bloodthirsty because he left us. Didn't matter that he said the school system. He left us. He was a big part of the team. He helped us go to the World Series, and he left. Now, take Soto, who's a better player, is a position player, and went to the Mets, not the Rockies. Any Met fan who doesn't understand it, like, you're clueless. You should understand it. But what I said coming into this series is what I say now. That's about them. And if we're doing the Henley Mullins, yeah, they may talk a lot about this. For us, this was a series against the Yankees that I wanted to win. That's it. Like, that's, I don't look at it as anything other than that. Now, when we talked about Soto earlier getting hot, to me, it wasn't about, oh, I want him to stick it to his former team. It was, I hope this is the moment he gets hot. I hope this is the moment where he starts to become the player we paid $765 million to. So, yeah, this series was more so for the Yankee fan to get their bloodthirst against the guy that left them.
All right, well, let's get to the emails. I want to hear all the positives from everyone.
All right, well, let's start with someone who's mad at my fine executive producer, Tommy Lukauer. This is from Ralph. Ralph writes, Evan and Pete, let's not even sweat this. Yankee fans are so petty, and it's annoying. But Tommy's killing us with this nonsense about it being the Yankees World Series. They literally were in the World Series last year. To even make that comment is very dumb. I'm not responsible for what he says. ESPN announcers are awful and homers for the Yankees. Beyond ridiculous. They shouldn't do another Mets game. Oh, wait, next week they get to kiss the Dodgers' ass. With that said, the Mets are good. Very good. Brazoban gets the I'm the Man Right Now award. Unfortunately, Pete is the negative. Tonight sucked, but it's just another game. I'll be in a suite at Fenway. Well, enjoy your time at Fenway. Look, I think Pete was a candidate for the net negative. I give it to Soto, I think, a lot because we all expected this to be the breakout. But look, Soto's defense was good. He made a big base running move. Pete's offense was okay in game two. The rest of the weekend sucked and obviously made a big error. Look, this series featured a lot of net negatives. Take your pick. David writes, Mets offense can't turn it around. Evan, Met fans are fooling themselves thinking this offense will turn it around. Outside of Lindor, Soto, and Alonso, no one can be relied on. After the top three, their 4-9 is truly not good. Vientos, career 242 batting average. Before last season, he hit 167 in 2022 and 211 in 2023. Alvarez, career 223 batting average. Career high 250 batting average right now. Taylor, career 241 batting average. Acuna, unproven, but doesn't seem like he's going to be much more than a 250 hitter. Nimmo, drastically declined in 24 and continuing poor hitting in 25. Marte, no need to detail how terrible he is. Winker, career 262 hitter, but hasn't hit over 260 since 2021. Beatty, career 216 hitter. McNeil, hitting meh, but on the downside of his career. So who is going to turn this offense around? Who has proven in the past they are a better hitter than they are showing now and will turn it around? Vientos, because of one good season? Alvarez, because we think of his potential? Nimmo, who's been terrible for a season and a quarter? Beatty, who hasn't shown any consistency in the big leagues? Marte, whose career is over? McNeil, who's on the back end of his career? This offense is in massive trouble, and it's foolish to think otherwise. Wow, that was a takedown right there. A couple of things. Don't minimize the fact that they've got a top of the order that's as lethal as it can be. You know, Pete Alonso is coming back to the mean, but Juan Soto should be better. He should be significantly better. So I wouldn't minimize the fact that their top three hitters are that good. And I think what you did with everybody else is you looked at the negative to their career. You know, Brett Beatty, I don't know if this is a turnaround for Brett Beatty, but he has shown a pulse over the last couple of weeks. Acuna, we don't know what he is. Now, you're assuming he's a 250-ish hitter? We don't know. You're right about Alvarez. A lot of it is the potential, and we've seen it. But I don't think this lineup is as bad as you just described it. Luckily, their pitching has bailed him out, which is kind of stunning when you think about it. Christopher Kagan is pissed off about the schedule. Why doesn't baseball balance the schedule like the NFL, or at least do a better job? The Mets have been getting effed over for years now. The Mets lose tiebreakers in 22 and 24 to the Braves, so even though there are 162 games, one or two games can be the difference. This year, the Mets have four different games. The Mets this year have four different games to the Phillies. The Mets have three extras against the Yankees. The Yankees are not only in first in the AL East, but the AL's best record and went to the World Series. The Phillies get three extra games against the Blue Jays. Correct me, the Phillies were finished first in the NL East. Why do they get three extra versus a last place team from last year? The Mets get an extra game against the Dodgers with the best record and World Series champs, and the Phillies get an extra game against the Rockies, who again were a last place team. How do the Mets get four games? All right, let me get to this, because he's right. The Yankee thing is just the geographic of baseball wanting to promote their local rivalries. So this has been going on forever. This is not new. Last year, it was four games against the Yankees, guaranteed. This year, it is now six. And this has been going on since 1999, where the Mets play the extra interleague games against the Yankees, and the Yankees tend to be good. They haven't been under 500 since freaking 1992. The one with the Dodgers and the Rockies, I'm not even sure how MLB does that, but you play teams not in your division, but in your league, six or seven times. And I have no idea how that occurs. Like, if that is based on anything other than just, you're playing seven games against this team or that team. The Yankee thing, look, I could sit here and get all pissy about it. It's been going on forever. I mean, it is what it is. Like, I wish baseball treated Mets-Yankees the way the NFL treats Jets-Giants, which is, hey, there's a formula. You'll play them when the formula hits. There's nothing special to Jets-Giants the way it is Mets-Yankees. But we got to deal with it. And honestly, I know in football we make a big deal of the schedule. In baseball, it's about when you play a team. Last year, the Mets went 4-0 against the Yankees. They went to the World Series. They happened to play them when J.D. Davis was their cleanup hitter, you know? So a lot of it is about timing. Lawrence writes, Pete Alonso, I'm disgusted. His April batting performance was an illusion. His defense stinks and his offense isn't what it's cracked up to be. He can walk after this season. He's done nothing for weeks and can't make simple plays. Ryan Clifford time, and the rest of the bats can wake up too. Wow. Matt Wright, shades of Duda. But honestly, here's the deal. That was a great game and a great series. The reason you lost game three is Brazoban and Stanek. If you rely on guys like Stanek, Brazoban, and the Reed Garretts of the world for high leverage, big time moments consistently, you're going to lose. Stanek is only good in garbage time, and we all know that. 100 doesn't mean anything when it's straight and you don't have another secondary pitch. Most of Brazoban's good moments have been in low leverage, whatever situations. Both guys are not dominant relievers. Nothing close. I do think, to a degree, Matt, you're going to be right, that when we're sitting here in July, we're probably going to talk about the need to add a high leverage, big time reliever. We'll see once we get closer who that guy is. My hope with Brazoban, I don't think that's fair. I don't think most of his situations have been low leverage. This wasn't low leverage. The last two games he pitched in wasn't low leverage. That's not fair. He comes into a tie game in the seventh inning. After he gets the first two out, he's got to go through two, three, four, five of the batting order in a tie game. He's got to strike out Anthony Volpe with the bases loaded. Go back to Saturday's game. It's the sixth inning. It's a tie game. There's two on and one out. So I think at the beginning of the season, you're right. Brazoban barely made the team. Like, so yes, early on, he was not used in the highest of leverage situations. Lately, he has been. The thing about bullpens, and we saw it last year, the Mets at the deadline went, hey, let's bring in the lottery tickets and see what happens. And they're seeing some reward on that this year, specifically with Waskar Brazoban. But I do think if we're projecting what we're talking about going to the trade deadline by July, I think we are probably talking about the Mets adding a big-time reliever. We got the Red Sox coming up. This is a very tough schedule. I know the Red Sox are sitting, a couple of games under 500, but I think you look at the talent on this roster, you figure they're better than that. That's the other thing to keep an eye on when you face a team. Like the Mets face the Cardinals. We all thought they sucked. Now the Cardinals are battling for first place. Mets play the Twins. We thought they sucked. They go out and they win a million games in a row. I would project the Red Sox will finish above 500. I don't love them to win the division. I think the Yankees are going to win the division. I've thought that all year, but I do think the Red Sox are better than what their record says. So this is a tough stretch for the Mets. These three against the Yankees, the three up in Boston, and then obviously the series at home against the LA Dodgers. Luckily, it'll go from the extreme of tough to the extreme of, boy, you better win all these games when they take on the White Sox and the Rockies. But it'll be Kodai Senga pitching the opener against a right-hander named Hunter Dobbins, who's pitched reasonably well for Boston. Clay Holmes is going to pitch the Tuesday game. It sounds like, what's his name? Is coming off the IL, the former Dodger. My God, my brain is fried.
Walker Buehler.
I'm sorry. I got to unmute. What'd you say?
Walker Buehler.
Sorry about that. This is what happens when we're doing a Rico at 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, who's that guy? I feel like my dad or my grandpa. And then the real challenge is going to be Tyler McGill against Garrett Crochet in the finale of this series, where they face a lefty where we won't see Brett Beatty, even though we'll want to see Brett Beatty. So two righties and a lefty in this Boston series. Hopefully they can win two out of three and at least make this road trip a nice, solid 3-3 road trip. But frustrating weekend. There's no other way to put it. And the offense is a worry. Can Fenway Park be where they break out of it? Hopefully that's the case. I apologize. We only got to a couple of your emails. If we went to all of them, we'd be here for 2 hours, and that's not healthy for any of us. So, but you can email us. We will try to read as many as we can as we do Rico's throughout the week. TheRicoB@gmail.com. TheRicoB@gmail.com. So officially, if you are keeping track at home, the Rico I'm the Man Now star of the series is indeed Waskar Brazoban. And the you tell me, I say the negative is Juan Soto. Do you want to put up Pete Alonso because of the error? I mean, I know I'm going to be ripped for being biased. You tell me, should it be Soto, Alonso, or somebody else? Do you want to make it Soto?
I want to keep it Soto because I do think that offensively, that was a key that we were looking for. There was a lot of opportunity for him to come up in a big spot, and he did nothing. Yes, Alonso threw the ball away in the eighth inning. Okay, fine, but there was a lot of other issues going on. It wasn't just that.
Yeah, and I apologize. I take an L for suggesting that the Met bats were going to hit Max Fried. That did not happen, so sorry about that one. That's an L. Oh, by the way, DeGrom at Yankee Stadium this week. And unfortunately, he's scheduled to pitch Wednesday, which is such a busy sports night. You got the Mets wrapping up the series against the Red Sox. And obviously, the Knicks are opening up the Eastern Conference Finals against the Indiana Pacers. Otherwise, I would consider going to Yankee Stadium and doing a drive home Rico where I would break down DeGrom's return to New York. But unfortunately, that is not going to work out. Either way, frustrating series against the Yankees. Let's turn it around against the Red Sox. Let's help the Yankees out by turning it around against the Red Sox. Remember, subscribe to Rico Bronya. So whenever we have a pop-up Rico, which can happen at any moment, you're ready and you're not surprised. And also subscribe to the WFAN YouTube page if you consume the Rico Bronya via YouTube. Thank you very much for listening to a frustrating, kind of depressing edition of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
No.
Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going, whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.